Hello, on Management TV. My dear guest for today is a psychologist, Robert Hogan, an icon, a person who's been shaping the world of, I would say, organizational psychology for more than 50 years. And my question is, Robert, you are now at a conference of assessment systems, Czech Republic, and your speech is more aimed on how the organizations behave and what kind of managers or leaders they choose. And basically, one of the most important things I heard in your speech was that 70% of all leaders or of all top managers in the United States shouldn't be at their positions. Why do you think it's so?
Well, this is a, my background, I'm basically an engineer. I really believe in data, and I really believe in making things run well. And I think the key to a well-run team is a good manager. The data are perfectly clear. 70% of American employees, people in American workforce, 70% of them say they would take a pay cut if someone would fire their boss. People care more about how they're treated than they care about how they're paid. They care more about how they're treated than they care about their salaries. That's true. And the data are perfectly clear on this, if you believe in data.
If you take a closer look at your testing methods, how do you prove that what you actually test and how do people actually behave has a close correlation?
It's all life. The world is all about statistics, and to do the assessment thing correctly is actually quite hard. Most of our competitors cheat. We're the only test publisher in the world who does things correctly. To do things correctly is you write a series of items, and you have people answer those items. Then you gather performance data on those people, and you compare their responses on the items to their performance. And then you have to do that again and again and again until you have a set of items that predicts, for example, performance and sales. So you get a set of items, get performance and sales, you compare the items to performance and sales, then you do it again, then do it again, and do it again until you get a group of items that are tightly focused on performance and sales and you know that they work. But to do that takes a long time and a lot of work and a lot of money. It's more than most organizations, more than most of my competitors are willing to invest. They don't want to invest the time or the money to do the proper research. And we have data on every job in the U.S. economy, every job from janitor to CEO, casino dealers, horse jockeys, blah, blah, blah. So that there's a right way, and it's very atheoretical. You just say, what items from this group predict performance over here? And then once you find the items that predict, then you can talk about the theory of the whole thing. But first you have to have, it's just very analytical, very statistical. They call it big data these days. It's find items that predict performance, and then that's how you proceed.
When you take a look at your whole life work, what is the biggest thing that changed from the 60s to 2016 or 17, which is going to be, what is the biggest difference in the company management, in the leadership skills? What is there a big change from the 60s till now?
There are definite changes. I'm an academic. I was at a university most of my academic career. In the 1960s, academics, who are the source of ideas for everything, the academics absolutely did not believe personality existed. They thought there was no such thing as personality, that what people did depended on the circumstances they were in. And that, I'm the guy, that was the fight that I had to carry on when I started, was to prove that personality exists and it actually matters. Then associated with that, so no one believed in personality, associated with that, no one believed in leadership. They said, I used to teach the course. The textbook said, leadership is a function of a situation. It all depends on the situation. A good leader here can't be a good leader there because the situations are different. So I'm the guy that made the case that A, personality is related to leadership, and B, leadership really matters. And a good leader here is going to be a good leader here if the job is the same. A good football coach here is going to be a good football coach here. You follow these guys around. They go from one team that's a loser, this guy, Mourinho, the Portuguese, he went to Chelsea, I think is his first team. They were nothing, he took them to the World Cup, and everywhere he's gone, he's taken a team. That's leadership. and it's real. But academics and business people didn't believe that, and I don't know why, because it's perfectly obvious. The great general of the American Civil War was a fellow named Ulysses S. Grant. He was in the Mexican-American War. He didn't do well. He went to West Point. After the war, he became a drunk and flunked and failed out. And the American Civil War started. He was living in Cincinnati, Ohio, and the war started, and they needed officers, so they went to him, sobered him up, and they said, "You've had experience in the military. Would you come?" And so they put him in charge of just a little unit. Well, he won. He just won. He won. He won. He defeated. So they put him in charge of a larger unit. He won. Then they put him in charge of a larger unit, and he won again. He never, ever lost a fight, ever, at any level of command. And finally, he was in charge of the whole part of the central country, but the main army was in Washington, D.C., and the President, Lincoln, said, "There's this guy out in the middle who's never lost a fight. I'd like for him to be in charge of the whole army." And the guys, the politicians in Washington, said, "He can't be in charge of the army. He's a drunk." And Lincoln said, "I don't care if he's a drunk. He'll fight." And he wins. So, but the circumstances, for his name was Grant, is the circumstances in which he was in charge changed constantly, but he was a winner everywhere he went. Here's a rule: winners win and losers lose.
What I understand is that you distinguish between politicians, and it doesn't matter if in politician in the politics or in the business, and leaders.
Yes.
What is the biggest difference?
There's real data on this. One more time, my background is engineering. We are a data-based organization. We only believe in data. And most people don't believe in data. They just believe in their own ideology or their own... But data are your friends. So the data are quite clear. There are people in organizations who rise very quickly, who get rapid promotions and who get rapid pay raises. And then there are people in organizations whose team performs very well. And they're not the same people. The people that rise rapidly are not in charge of high-performing teams, and the people who are in charge of high-performing teams don't rise rapidly. And if you follow them around during the day, they do very different things. People who rise rapidly spend all their time on the phone networking. The people whose teams perform very well spend all their time working on their teams. Organizations don't know who's doing a good job. They only know who they like. Who do they like? The guys that are on the phone with them all day. Who do they not know about? The guys who are actually doing a good job. So the big challenge in organizations is to get them to focus on results, to pay attention to the guys whose teams are performing well, and ignore the guys who are good at networking.
If you take a closer look at the whole system, from the elementary school, secondary school, universities, MBA studies, and everything, what you say in your work is quite revolutionary, because
yes,
in the traditional model, the companies hire the best students from the MBA schools or from schools or from the special engineering schools. Then they promote them, they make them talents, they make them high potentials, then they become managers, and everything just climbs directly on the organizational ladder.
Yes.
Usually the most successful people didn't have to get over any big challenges.
Yes.
And this is not war. So if the top managers are top managers and they lose their job, the company doesn't die, they don't die, maybe they close the door, they go somewhere else, but they have nothing to lose. If you, and according to your work, take a look at the closer, what was happening at the warfare, if you lose and you say it, you're
you
eaten,
die.
You die, your organization dies.
Yeah.
But what the companies should do at the present, and there's no warfare, at least in the organization point of view, what they should do to change this view, to hire really good people, not the people who are most charismatic, who are the best potentials according to the MBA schools they studied, what they should do?
I would say two things. First, I think the larger a business organization gets, the more it will come to resemble the government. So that in really big companies like General Electric, they'll be indistinguishable from the Department of Defense. And it'll be all politics all the time. And because they're too big to fail, it just doesn't matter how badly they're run, because they're too big to fail. Where leadership matters is at the level of startups, of new companies. And startups and new companies are the future of your business and our business. So that's where leadership matters. So with regard to these big companies, they're just going to have to fail. Because they don't care. You can't reform them. It'll never be about leadership. It's always about politics. But where leadership really, really matters is in the small startups. And the small startups are the future of your economy. Don't you agree?
Yes.
You give in.
Because I mean, I run a small business, and if we fail, we just fail. We close the door. We are not on the market.
That's where real pressure exists.
But on the other hand, most of the people who are here at today's conference are people who are responsible for departments, who are the HR managers. What should they do?
They should do things right. They should do things correctly and try to avoid politics. They should try to reform their organizations from the inside. They should try to promote people based on talent and not on politics. It's hard.
If you mentioned that personality decides, and even if somebody is a successful politician, he's still successful.
Yes.
And you mentioned that winners win, losers lose.
Yes.
And if you become and you get on the top in politics, it doesn't matter in the organization or the politics, you must be successful. You must have some personality trait.
Real skills, yes, absolutely. I think, I don't personally like politicians, but you have to really admire Barack Obama, I think he's pretty much failed as a leader, but he's a very successful politician, and he has some real skills. He's fabulous on his feet. He can give, that's mostly what they have, is just they can give a really, really, really good speech. But and Hitler, right? He was really good in front of an audience. I mean, he was really good, and I'm sure he was quite smart in terms of knowing how to read people and manipulate things. So no, real politicians have real skills, but their skill involves building a constituency that will support them for wherever they want to go.
You define, as I understand correctly, four most important traits of personality for one to become a good leader, which is the
integrity.
Yes.
You have to be able to trust them. Second is they have to make good decisions. And part of making good decisions is to understand when you've made a bad decision and then fix it. And bad decisions are about keeping on when you have a bit. So they need to have integrity. They need to make good decisions. Third, they need to know something about the business. They need to know what they're talking about. And my example there is universities. University administrators are failed academics. They're people who failed at the business, so they go into administration, and that's why universities are so badly run. And then the fourth thing is they have to have a vision for the future, and it can't be a bullshit vision that they pulled out of their butt. It has to be a real, carefully thought. You know, here's what we're good at. Here's what the opportunities are. Here's what the competition are. This is what we need to do this way. You know, and that's a proper vision, is a successful way to the future. And it's not something like Donald Trump saying, we're going to win again. That's not a vision. That's just an empty statement. A real vision would be tax reform, doing this with the military, building relationships, restoring a proper, anyway, a vision is a strategic statement about the future purpose. It's got to be smart. It's hard to construct a vision as opposed to, we're just going to win again. We're going to be tired of winning because we're going to win so much.
If you mentioned data. Data is most important to assess one's personal reputation because it's the, as you mentioned, it's the view of the observer, not the actor. However, if you take a closer look at your data, what percentage of people that have ever come through your test have, according to the data, have the ability to succeed in all four of these factors? Is there any? Because you mentioned 70% of the top managers shouldn't be at their positions. So my question is there any potential? Is there any percentage of people who can replace them?
The thing about personality psychology, we call it individual differences. Everything of importance is a normal distribution. And so you talk about integrity, then you talk about competence, and then you talk about decision making, and then you talk about vision. And if you just take the top 10% out of each of those, that's not very many people.
Because it's not only the individual factors, it's a combination of all four.
Yes.
So, and for example, you mentioned Steve Jobs wasn't a good personal, he hadn't a good personal integrity because he wasn't much trustful and people couldn't, he wasn't consistent in his behavior, which is what I understand. But still, he was a good leader. So maybe, is there any compromising that may add up to some factors? And
how do you know that I said that? I didn't say that today. You must have read.
I've seen it on your video. Well, read
some of your books, that's very interesting. That's not fair. It depends on the level at which people are in an organization. So it's useful. You can make distinction between entry-level managers, middle managers, and top managers. Entry-level managers need those four things. Entry-level managers have to be able to create engagement. They have to get the workforce on board and go forward, and then they implement decisions that come down from up here. So for entry-level managers, those four factors are absolutely essential. and so social skill. For middle managers, their job is basically a political job. They have to take ideas from up here and sell them down here. And they have to deal with pushback from down here, and so they have to, they're just constantly negotiating. People at the top, what's most important at the top is good judgment and a good strategy. Jobs, Gates, Bill Gates, Bezos, Jeff Bezos, the Amazon guy, they all started their own business. They came to the business from the top. All they needed was good judgment and a vision. They didn't need social skill. If you come into the organization from the bottom and you want to go from the bottom to the top, you need social skill. If you come in from the top and just start the organization, then you just need vision and strategy.
Which is something that just you chose.
Yeah, which those guys, the Facebook guy, the Amazon guy, they have, you know, they were good about. But they're unpleasant people. Those are people who could not come in at the bottom and make it to the top. They'd never make it. Because they lack those characteristics.
But as you said, they didn't come to the organization from the bottom.
No, they came. They parachuted in from the top, boink, and then they can do what they want. But nonetheless, 90% of those guys are going to fail. Mm-hmm. Most of those people are going to fail. It's only the 10% that actually, only 10% of 90% of all new businesses fail.
But I think this is something very natural, because when a small company is acquired by some bigger one, the top managers from the small company usually
get shot.
They just concentrate on the product. Yeah. They are not top managers anymore. They are just product guys, because they like creating the products and they don't necessarily.
And they'll never have a great career in the organization that acquired them.
Yeah. Exactly. Is there any field of, or what is the field for improvement? Is coaching? Or is the ability of coaching or development able to change the individual traits and to make people become more successful, or make, I don't want to say to make from the losers the winners, because it's maybe not possible, but what is the scale to which the personal integrity can be improved? Or
there's an old joke in psychology: how many psychologists does it take to change a light bulb? The answer is one. But the bulb has to really want to change. Can people change? Sure. But they have to really want to change. And it's usually because they understand they failed and they're about to lose their career. And unless they see that they failed and they're going to lose their career, they won't change. But at that point, it's then.
And what is the greatest motivator? Is it?
I would hope it's fear.
Yes, and to be, how to play the devil. How do you create this
fear
level of fear within the organization so that you are not fired as a manager and you still keep people motivated and willing to change at least their behavior for the situation in the organization?
You know, the guy to talk to would be Jose Mourinho. And I'm serious. I mean, that's what he does well. He said, look, we're going to fail. We're going to lose unless we do the following things. So there's a healthy kind of fear, and then there's just fear and intimidation. The healthy fear is fear of those guys out there. Unhealthy fear is fear of the guys in here. You know, fear of the police, fear of the, you know. You need to be afraid of your competition. I mean, you really do. But you need to think that the people inside the organization are the ones you can trust to help you get past it. Did that make any sense? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
You should be afraid of those guys, not these guys. If you're afraid of these guys, you're afraid of the wrong people.
Because there are the two basic tools to motivate people, at least. They must enjoy something and they must fear of something.
Enjoy your work and be afraid of going out of business.
Exactly. You, as I understood correctly, in the past, you were in the military.
Yes.
Is right. Is there a big difference between the organization, a military organization, or warfare, and the business unit? Is there such a big difference in the behavior, in the motivating people, in the fears? Of course, there's the immediate instant death if you do something wrong in warfare. But,
well, I think that there's not as much difference as you might imagine, because most of the time, militaries are at peace. And when a military is at peace, they just look like the Department of Agriculture. And most big businesses are so big that there's no sense of urgency, and they look like a Department of Agriculture. Rebecca was telling me she used to work for an agency there's a large military base where we live, and they were she was a recruiting, she worked for a recruiter, and they would get a lot of retired military officers who'd want to, so they, in the military you can retire at age 42, 45, something like that, which is relatively young. And okay, now I've had 30 years in the military, and I'm now about 50 years old, and I'm ready, with all my leadership experience in the military, I'm ready for a great executive. And she said they just failed, and because to have a successful career in the military, you have to do what you're told, and you'll be punished if you try to innovate. Seriously, you know, it's just a hierarchy, and you just do what you're told. So there's no opportunity for innovation or creativity. And when those guys move into the private sector, when they move into business, they just sit around waiting to be told what to do. They won't take initiative. So that's there. I would say that's the only real difference I can tell you. Yeah.
If you take a look on the results of your work and different cultures.
Actually, let me interrupt you. The way I got started with, I'm the guy who made the case that a significant number of existing managers are incompetent. I mean, but what started me down that line of analysis was a very famous book by an English psychologist named Dixon, D-I-X-O-N, and the book was published in 1976. The title of the book is The Psychology of Military Incompetence. And I read that book and I said, wow. Because that was consistent with my experience in the military. Psychology of military incompetence, and it's an easy step from psychology of military incompetence to the psychology of business incompetence.
Also in your work, now you mention a lot this dark side of personality. Can you explain what it means and what it is good for in your assessment tools or in your services?
Well, there was a very smart guy who was a friend of mine. His name was John Benz. It's a German name, Benz. He was the vice president for human resources at Sears, which at that time was a very successful wholesaler, retailer, big retail stores everywhere in the United States. And he was in charge, he was the head of HR, so he was in charge of hiring new managers. And they used an IQ test and a measure of normal personality to hire all their new managers. So all the new managers at Sears were smart and had a good bright side. They interviewed well. 65% of them failed. 65% of them failed. There's two-thirds of them failed. And he said, how can it be that they fail since we hired them based on on interviewing well and being smart? So he cataloged the reasons for, and he had like several thousand of them who failed, and he just said this guy failed for this reason, this guy failed for this reason, this guy failed for this reason, and he cataloged them, and he came up with 11 reasons why they were fired. And so character, I mean, if you get failed, you're going to fail for one of the following 11 reasons: being arrogant, being too emotional, being a micromanager, being a liar, being a attention seeker. You know, not being a team player. Well, I read those and I said, those sound like the 11 DSM-3 Axis II personality disorders that were right there in the psychiatric handbook. And I said, they line up. So I wrote items and tried to capture that, and it's worked out really, really well. There are these 11 reasons why managers fail, and that's it. They do it reliably, and you can identify that up front. And those derailing tendencies, those reasons they fail, are masked, are hidden by a good bright side. So the bright side is what you see during an interview. The dark side is what you see when they come to work, when they let down their guard. And so the two exist simultaneously, and you need to penetrate the bright side to get at the dark side, and.
Do you change your testing methods, or is there any new kit in your testing family in terms of your new findings or development of your methods, even with the closer look to the dark sides of the personality, or how the organizations change, or the new technology, internet stuff and everything? Is there anything new that is just...
Well, you know, the periodic table of chemistry is the same, but new chemicals are discovered all the time.
Okay.
But they have to be based on that periodic table. So there's a kind of core structure of personality, and then you can adapt that to new purposes. So recently we published a judgment measure, a measure of good judgment. But underneath that is our core assessments. We just published a new measure of high potential, to identify high potential people, but that's based on the core assessments. So we take the core assessments, which are like the periodic table of elements, and then we can turn use those for different purposes. We can make new products from those.
Emotional leadership or emotional intelligence is a term that is mentioned a lot of times. What is it good for, and how can it be used for the organizations to make larger profits or to do well?
Well, it turns out that emotional intelligence is a concept I think has been badly misunderstood. It's part of popular psychology.
Yes.
And anything that's part of popular psychology is useless. So the answer is it's a normal distribution, high emotional intelligence, low emotional intelligence. There's good news and bad news at both ends. People who are high on emotional intelligence are calm, steady, pleasant, always in a good mood, handle problems calmly. It's Obama, the Obama. They call him No Drama Obama. He's very calm, very steady, nothing upsets him. So that's what you get. But what you don't get is any sense of urgency, any drive to make something happen. So at the low end, where you get drive and energy and push, you also get volatility. You can't have them both. If you want calm, complacent, steadiness, you're not going to get any sense of urgency. He never makes decisions. He just moves. So pick your money. So if you want something to happen in the organization, you need people with low emotional intelligence. If you want everything to stay calm and happy with no progress, then you need people with high emotional intelligence. It's an idea that sounds intriguing, but is kind of silly and poorly understood.
But we still come back to these four factors.
Yeah. And emotional intelligence was not part of those four factors.
Sure. Yeah. And is there a way to monitor the real personal reputation? And can it be, maybe can this digital outprint on the internet, or can it be used just to monitor the person's real results or real behavior? Is there any way to just to take a closer look what is the real one's personal reputation or business reputation or work reputation?
Well, that's a really good question, and I think there are three answers to that. This is you right here. You'll have one reputation from your subordinates. You'll have another reputation from your peers, and you'll have another reputation from your bosses, and they're very different. The subordinates want to know if they can trust you. Your peers want to know. You're not going to outperform them. And the bosses want to know if you're useful to them.
Because what you mentioned is that people, they hate you when you're successful.
Yes, yes they do. Your peers want to know, they want to know if you're going to outperform them. And you need to pretend when you're with them that you're not going to outperform them. And then the bosses want to know if you're going to be good for their career.
Exactly.
You're going to make them look good.
What is the real reputation? Or is the mix of all it? Or how can you prove it?
Yeah.
You have a real reputation with your subordinates. You have a real reputation with your peers.
Exactly.
You have a real reputation with your boss.
So it's a situation management.
In a sense, yeah. 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 Well, that's true. Yeah. Well, it's you know, who you are depends on who's evaluating you, and those groups change.
And also, we play different roles in family, in the business. So it's a different reputation at home, different reputation.
Yep. Exactly. There. But they all matter.
It
will
matter.
Yep.
From completely different point of view, how did the story with Rostislav Benák and the assessment system Czech Republic? How did it start, all this story, getting together with Rostia and doing business together?
Well, I decided early on in the development of our business that we needed people in other locations so that when we develop business with large American multinationals, we could follow them to England or to France. And so I just self-consciously started trying to develop business partners. But I only wanted to develop business partners with people who were young and promising and look like they have. I believe in building with youth. I didn't want to develop business with old established companies because they have no energy. And he's a real dynamic, energetic, go get 'em guy, and he's really smart, and he speaks all these languages. I have to say, I didn't realize he was going to be as successful as he is. He's an amazing guy. But that was just how do you meet people? It's adventitious. It's accidental. I knew a guy in Spain who was really good, a Spanish academic, Rasta was working with him, and I met him at a conference, and I liked Rasta immediately, and I said, let's try this.
Does it help?
And he's a lot better now than he was then.
Which is good, actually. It should be this way.
Yeah, he's gotten a lot better.
Is it different in different cultures? Do you have to kind of turn your services or your work or your point of view when you work in Japan, when you work in Europe, when you work in the United States? Because all the cultures are completely different.
Yeah. We talk about personality in terms of the bright side, the dark side, and the inside. And the inside is values. Values vary across cultures. So the Japanese value one thing and the Czechs value something else. And so, yeah, so you have to pay attention to the values, but personality is the same. You see as many crazy people in Japan as you do in the Czech Republic.
I have one more question. What do you think that will be the issue in 10, 20 years in the future? What's going to come in the future that will maybe turn the companies completely around? Is it the technology or the large number of small businesses, or that the small businesses can, in a very short period of time, completely outcome the big businesses, as we see with Facebook, we see it with Google, we've seen it with Apple?
It's a really, really complicated question, and I think my ideas around that are probably not consistent with... I think companies like Facebook and Google are just entertainment. Sooner or later, food's going to matter. Mm-hmm. At some point, agriculture is going to be more important than fucking Facebook.
The basics, yes.
I mean, how are you going to eat off of Facebook? You know, so sooner or later, you know, the fundamentals of the economy are going to come back. These things are just diversions. Mm-hmm. They're entertaining, and people spend a lot of money on it. But I mean, really, first, what is it? Marx's line: "There is no God. There's only hunger." Well, sooner or later, we're going to be back to hunger. At which point, Facebook won't be very important.
So you think the big question will be how to deal with the real...
With this relentless increase in population. Mm-hmm. We're ruining the earth. Fish come from coral beds. Coral beds are dying. When the coral beds are dying, there won't be any fish. Then how are people going to eat fish? Thomas Malthus is writing about in the late 1700s. I've always thought he was right. He said human populations will always expand past the point, carrying point of the food supply. Always. So your population grow, and then they'll crash because they run out of food. Grow, crash because you run out of food. We're running out of, there's population growth is going to kill us. And so that's the future. What does the future hold? Starvation and warfare.
Sure. And what?
And Facebook won't help you.
And what can be done?
What are you going to do when they come for you? Get on Facebook?
You have to go back and either fight for food to come to the basics. You have to, sure. And
the tools. I'm sorry, that's not a very happy view, but I'm right. The population is just going like this. Climate is going like this. Arable land is going like that.
Well, we see it on the refugee problem in Europe. We see it everywhere. But anyway, what can be done with this problem on the organizational level? To behave more effectively, to treat the resources better. What can be done on the organizational level to survive, not only on the organizational level, but globally?
I mean, it needs to be a value change. People in U.S. organizations are greedy and selfish. As long as people are greedy and selfish, they're going to do what maximizes their profits and takes care of them, and they don't care about anybody else. You need a little altruism, and I just, you know, it's going to be hard.
Well, it is the first rule of economics that people always behave in their own intention. Yeah,
and the fundamental goal of leadership, for me, there's a moral component to all this. I'm quite serious. There's a moral component. Leadership is about getting people to work for the common good. That's where salvation is going to lie. And what the selfishness principle has now overwhelmed business. But effective teams, effective sports teams play for the common good. That's the goal of leadership, is to get people to behave in a way that's good for everybody and not just for leadership. One more time, leadership is a resource for the group, not a source of privilege for the incumbents.
But still in the world, you see that the small percentage of people who control most of the resources, it's that the really small number of people control over 80% of all the global resources,
exactly.
which is something that is the reality. But what, and I heard from Soros, who is the multimillionaire, that
George Soros.
George Soros.
He said something that was very interesting for me.
He's a smart guy.
The rich people must really consider if they want to be hanging on the tree or they have less money.
I really agree. I think he's right. I really agree.
Because it won't be about losing the money. It will be that they can
kill you.
They kill you, exactly.
And eat you.
And eat you.
If they're hungry enough.
But still, we are today at the conference where we have most managers and people who are responsible for hiring people and training people. What would be your message for these people? What should they do in order for their organizations to behave more effectively, to hire the real leaders, not the politicians? What would be your advice? Simple thing.
The simple thing is they need to think about the long-term success of the company, not their paychecks. They need to work for the good of the company, not for their own welfare. And good luck with that.
Robert Hogan, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you very much.
To have you here.